The end of August sees the Delft Jazz Festival, one of the most popular in the city, not least because it's free. It's organised by Bram Stoken. We met for a chat in a terrace cafe, but the moment we sat down under a canopy, the heavens opened and there was a dreadful storm. So unfortunately there's a lot of background noise with the rain falling on the canopy and trucks going through puddles. But nevertheless, it was a good interview, and I started by asking him how the whole thing got started.
That's an interesting story, because we have a commenter on the current style, and that's Jerry Steiger. He's a trumpeter and he likes the music of the swing era, and that's more 1950, and he is a commenter on the jazz festival now, but he created the festival in 1985, and then it was a Dixieland festival, old style. So when in 2006 I was asked to help the Stichting for the festival, I was thinking there should be a change in the program, because the gemeente decided to cut down the subsidy because the festival was too old-fashioned and it had no new approach and everything like that. And then we had to decide to make it more modern, and that was when I arrived at 2006. I started with a couple of people. I was asked by the prior chair lady to come in the board and think about the festival. And then in a short amount of time we created a new festival with Hans Dulver on the market.
So when it started, the first few years, it must have been much smaller.
Yes.
But it was still in the market and still free.
Yeah, always in the market, always free, and different stages, also based the markt, Brabantse Turfmarkt.
Because now it's quite big, isn't it? I mean, you have how many stages? Three stages? Four stages?
No, we have, I think, five. We have market, we have based the market, we have Doelenplein, we have Agathaplein, and we have Kromstraat.
And there were 3 days.
And 3 days, and it wasn't always 3 days.
So how many musicians now play? How many bands?
I think about 70 or so.
Wow. And this is from all over Holland, or just local?
They are mostly national artists, and also a stage for Delft, on the Agathaplein, especially for Delft artists, amateurs, because the Delft pro artists, they can play in Delft anytime, so that's not so interesting for the festival. If you see a local guy during the year, why should you put them on a festival in once a year?
But there seems to be a lot of jazz musicians in Delft.
Yeah, because they have also a lot of students who study technique at the university, but they also study jazz.
There's not a special. Officially.
There's a course. Vereniging, how you say, society, student society, who are busy with jazz, and they make workshops, they make lectures at the TU, and they organize everything around jazz. And that's very special. And then you have the group of locals. Also,
there are a lot. I mean, how many jazz musicians do you think there are in Delft?
I don't know about the number, but I know there are a lot of players.
What I haven't seen here is traditional jazz.
No, it's the only tradition. The most traditional jazz was in the Bebop, Café Bebop, at Sunday. They programmed, when the old owner was there, Pete Suiker, they programmed old-fashioned jazz at Sunday, during the year.
Because I was doing some research, because I'm doing for my... Did you look at the magazine?
Not yet.
Okay, well, I'm listing all the jazz clubs by town.
Okay, yeah.
And I was looking... Where was it? Harlem, or I think.
Yeah.
And there was one
traditional jazz club.
Yeah.
Which took place on a Sunday afternoon.
Yeah, also Sunday.
And it looked like an old people's club.
Yeah, that's true.
Everybody there was 80.
Yeah, 80 or 70, the age for old-fashioned jazz.
And we said the other day, the Dutch Swing College band, they were playing there.
Yeah, but you're right about the age. And that's what we think is not good for the music, because if you do only old-fashioned jazz, you get a handful of lovers, and it will be a fine scene, and but not for the greater public.
Because jazz is in a way quite purist, quite elitist, isn't it?
Yes, it can be. It can be. It's not always like that.
But very often.
But if you look at... I always choose Miles Davis as an example. And then I say, in the 1960s and 1960s, starting 1970, he met Hendrix. And he was turning his band into a jazz rock group. That is now almost 50 years ago. 50 years ago, older than I am. I am 48 now, and when I was born, Miles Davis already started with fusion and jazz rock. In a Silent Way was an album from the 1970s. So I'm already old. When I go to Kromstraat, I'm an old guy. There are only 20s there.
But are the 20-year-olds interested in jazz?
And that's the point. How do you get them interested in jazz? By bringing a festival that shows young talent. Young people playing jazz attract young people who listen to jazz.
But I always get the feeling, this is like we were talking the other day about Brian Jones,
mm-hmm.
that people play jazz, I'm talking about the young people,
yeah.
but they really want to do rock and roll.
Yeah, that's also... And it can be combined...
Because rock and roll is much more glamorous, less esoteric.
Yeah, of course, and... What was also the case is that in the 1940s, jazz was the popular music.
Absolutely. And as I told you, in England, before the Beatles, it was pop
music.
It
was jazz. Yeah.
It was pop music.
Yeah. And that's lost in the generation afterwards. And some jazz musicians catch up with the time and incorporate those styles from now into their music. But some stay at their old style, and then they lose the connection with the young public.
But it is a matter of style, because I was looking at pictures this morning, the Dutch Swing College band and some of the others, they're all wearing suits.
Yeah, but also in their musical style, they use traditional instruments.
Mm.
If you translate the Dutch Swing College music and you put a little different drum behind it, more electronic, and you replace the clarinet with a synthesizer
and the banjo with a guitar
and with some effects on it, you get a totally different style.
Yeah.
While musicology spoken, the music can be the same, the solos can be the same. It doesn't have to be a different solo. It's only the sound of the solo. We are not used to a clarinet anymore. We're used to a synthesizer or a guitar or a saxophone.
Has it been done? I mean, are there bands that play the trad repertoire with
I don't know of any, because mostly they stay traditional to the instruments.
Because that's
also
right, they're very purist.
Yeah, purist. Yeah.
And they say, if it was written after 1935,
And it happens also with amateurs. I was doing jam sessions in the bebop for maybe 12 years, and there I met a lot of amateur players who also played real book jazz, and that's also old songs that are written down so you can jam it over the world from a real book. But I discovered that a lot of amateurs are also purists, and they stay traditional.
Maybe more so, I mean.
And they stay traditional to the sheet that they have in front. I was always trying to improvise with the sheet, and maybe you stretch a chord a lot longer, or go to a different chord while it's not written there. And I was hoping the other musicians
that's the point of jazz,
could come along with those experiments in music. But then I discovered that these amateurs, they don't want to experiment with the form and the structure. They want to stay to the sheet. And that's a little bit conservative for me.
It's not interesting.
And it's not interesting.
The
and
music
also
becomes like in a museum.
Yes. And jazz is not the idea of jazz is for me experimentation and improvisation. A lot of improvisation in many forms.
Well, that's almost the definition of jazz, isn't it?
For me, it is. But some see it as a sort of classical music. It should be played like this. The arrangement that somebody invented as an improvisation gets the standard. So we play the standard over and over again.
And the same with improvisation. If you're doing an improvisation, the same song every night for a year, your improvisation is going to be the same.
Yeah. So you should change the songs. And also my problem was with the real book that in the time it was written, it was appropriate to play these songs because they were on the radio and people listened to that kind of music. But for me, as a later generation, Michael Jackson and Prince was on the radio when I was young. So as a jazz musician, I consider myself also as a jazz musician. If any label fits, it should be jazz. I should play more Michael Jackson and Prince and Madonna than the Bernstein and the...
But I mean, because when I was 16 or 17, which was when the trad jazz was really big, I had friends who played jazz, and we all had a book with our record with a list of all the songs.
And they
still do.
They still do, yeah. I think it should be more... it should be changed
That's the point of jazz, isn't it?
And also, when we talk about classical music, we went to the classical Delft Chamber music, and I saw the piece that was composed. It was a world premiere I've heard of. And then I was thinking, if a pianist could improvise this, it would be called classical music, but in my definition, it should be jazz music then.
It's
funny. But this is written down.
It's funny, because it is written down. Every dot is written down. And it's very formal.
Yeah.
But the sound sounds very free and improvised.
Yeah, yeah. And also the composer...
There's almost a contradiction there.
Yeah, and the composer who created this song, this piece, he was at one time playing at his piano and trying different things.
Or maybe he had a sequencer and put in all the different parts.
Yeah, but mostly they improvise also. Classical composers. Just trying out different set styles.
So how did you get involved in jazz in the first place? When did your connection with jazz start?
It started with me in 1985. When I heard Miles Davis on the radio. He was performing at North Sea Jazz in The Hague, and he played Human Nature and Time After Time, and I knew those songs from the radio. So for me, that was the first catch of people improvising on those pop melodies.
And what did you listen to before then?
I listened to Beatles and to Rolling Stones and to Police also, Sting and the Police. And I was more into that kind of pop music.
So did it change completely overnight? Did you throw away all your Beatles stones?
No. I still listen to that music. I never threw it away. But then something came added to it. Miles Davis was really added to my wish list. And then, more important, that was 1985. I had this tape on cassette because I recorded it from the radio. And then in 1987, I had the chance to go to a concert of Miles Davis in Rotterdam. It was a only Miles Davis concert. It was not a festival. And he played there for 3 hours, non-stop. So then I was really how you say, mesmerized, and I was like a magician that puts a trick on you.
And how old were you then?
I was 18, so perfect age for discovering new music. And it was so special, so fantastic. I tell it over and over to anybody, because I had a friend who I discovered later. He had a recording of that show. And that show I really played for 1 year every day, the recording of that friend. So I was very lucky to have that recording.
And, but did you play keyboards already, or did you play anything?
Yeah, I played already keyboards, and then I decided to buy a trumpet, and I wanted to be a Miles Davis figure. And I really went far in it, because I also bought a sunglass, and I had a silver coat, and I had a Walkman with earphones, and a trumpet with a damper, with a mute. And I played on the street in Delft. I was walking on the street, rehearsing those songs with my Walkman. So it was a crazy period, of course. And then
But were you alone with this, or did you have friends?
No, I was really alone with this. It was my manic episode. And it went into psychosis also. And it was very influenced by Miles Davis in his music and his interviews and his stories. And yeah, it was not healthy anymore.
How long did this go on for?
It went very long, till his death, I think. And even after his death, I stayed interested in Miles Davis. But I think especially till his death. Then I had the wish to meet him. It was a personal wish. I also had this with Prince. It was a personal wish to meet him and to talk about music. Maybe, no, not an obsession, because I was not obsessed every day with it, but it was a silent wish. And
what was the connection between Prince and Miles
there
Davis?
Was a connection. They played together. And Miles played songs
musically,
of...
musically, I mean.
Yeah, Miles played songs of compositions of Prince. And they also met each other. And Prince is also a fantastic musician. He can play every instrument and makes beautiful music, beautiful recordings. Also experimental sometimes. Miles is more experimental. But they also have had a mutual respect for each other. So then I can tell I was lucky to meet Joe Zawinul, also a hero of mine. And I didn't meet Prince, I didn't meet Miles. I saw them live, both. But I met really Joe Zawinul. I talked to him, drank a Sleepo Peach with him, and that was very interesting.
So why did you not continue with the trumpet?
Because it takes a lot of time to maintain the technique on the trumpet. You have to rehearse every day, and it has also a physical heavy approach. It's like top sport. You have to train your lips and your mouth,
embouchure,
to play the trumpet well. And after a while, I was thinking, I go back to the piano, back to the synthesizer.
Did you have proper training as a child to play piano?
Yeah, I have music lessons, private lessons, and like we say, piano lesson Dutch. And it was also with a teacher or a woman or a guy.
Since what age?
Since my 10th. Yeah, my 10th. Because then we moved to another house, and my parents bought me a piano. So that's when I started to have lessons. And before, I was playing on the piano of my grandparents when I visited them.
And when you first started, what were you playing? The traditional teaching things, I suppose? Beatles,
yeah. We started with Beatles.
There's a lot of good piano parts in Beatles.
Yeah, it was beautiful. Yesterday, I remember as a part, that, I had sheet music for yesterday. And of course, you learn first the notes, and with simple child melodies. But then when it came to music, I discovered also, through piano lessons, I discovered the Beatles. And I am like, if I discover a piece of music, I tend to explore the artist more and more.
I do the same.
So I had a friend who played the guitar, and I was visiting him on Saturday every week. And he had a book of the Beatles, and there were maybe 350 songs in it. And we played and sang all those Beatles songs from the book. We played the guitar and we sang with it. So it's a lot. It's a great influence on my life, the Beatles, because I explore them every
day. I think on everybody's life.
Yeah, and I like, for instance, the song "A Day in a Life" with the orchestral parts and. But many Beatles songs.
Oh, a lot of this one, Strawberry Fields. And
More experimental Beatles songs.
And did you like the later, more experimental John Lennon things?
No, because I liked John Lennon, but I didn't like Yoko Ono. She sang on the half of the songs of the record, and I didn't like that. But maybe I was not mature enough
No, no, you were mature.
Because it's from an artist's point of view, maybe interesting what she does, but I don't know about that.
I think not.
I like John Lennon.
So after you discovered Miles Davis, there must have been other musicians as well that you discovered that influenced you.
Through Miles, you discover a lot of musicians. Because you have Herbie Hancock, you have Joe Zawinul, you have Jacob Pastorius, you have the drummers, the saxophone players.
Did you never go to America to see these musicians?
I went to America in 1987, but I didn't go to concerts then. I was too young for it to really find out where you should be. And I forgot to tell you one important thing. Because when I arrived at Delft in 1987, there was a venue called De Waag. It's called now also De Waag, it's a cafe, but it used to be a theater. So, the theater, 1987, there was a series of jazz every week, and it was called Smur Jazz. And Smur is from the Danish smørrebrød, and that was avant-garde jazz. So, when I was 18, I discovered 2 years, I went to the series. I went every week, or every 2 weeks, I don't remember. And I saw the whole range of avant-garde musicians, also international, but also national. And I saw many and many players and many styles of music, all avant-garde. So that was training to my ears, to open up to experimental music. Sometimes there were only 5 people in the audience. It wasn't very popular, but I liked it very much. I also liked Willem Breuker. That's a Dutch free-form player, also from the 70s. He was already active then. We have Han Benning, we have Misha Mengelberg. So that's a style of jazz that's not popular, but it's important in the history of Dutch jazz.
I mean, who's the most influential person in that music in Holland at the moment?
I think Benjamin Herman is a good example. He is from the mainstream school, but he can be avant-garde too. Because he knows these guys that I talked about just ago. He knows them. He knows Han Benning. He did a project with them. But he can be also a Charlie Parker player. I saw him in this, he played Charlie Parker's stuff. He's a good player also. And he is a representative of the mainstream modern jazz approach. Benjamin Herman, I think.